Lake Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Joy Powers.
And I'm Bonnie North. The latest in the growing Star Wars film franchise hits the screen today worldwide. Solo was directed by Ron Howard, who took over the production midstream after insurmountable creative differences arose between the film's producer and the previous directors.
The film focuses on the backstory of a young Han Solo, although this movie has as much in common with classic heist films as it does with sci-fi. Our own Star Wars aficionado, Audrey Nowakowski, sat down with film contributor Dave Lurson to break down what's good and bad about Solo.
Dave Lurson is the arts and entertainment editor of the Shepherd Express newspaper, and he's our regular film contributor. He spoke with Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski about Solo, which opens today.
Not content to produce a set of trilogies, Star Wars mastermind George Lucas has encouraged the proliferation of side stories and backstories, a virtual universe of space-age myth. The latest addition to the saga, Solo, a Star Wars story, counts as a prequel to the original 1977 film. It's the origin story of Han Solo with a glance at the rebellion's origins.
Solo, a Star Wars story. What was your first impression?
Well, I enjoyed it from the get-go. It certainly gets off to a fast start. It throws you into a particular world, a very unpleasant one, looking like some of the worst squalor in our own planet currently. The Han Solo character in this movie is a young man, maybe even 20 years old, perhaps. A petty criminal. There's nothing much else for him to do there. He and his girlfriend, Kira, dream of escape. He wants to be a pilot. They want to get out of this horrible place. And we have a flying car chase, I guess, at the beginning of the movie. Lots of action. The pacing is quite good. It's swift but steady, unrelenting but not exhausting. I think that with a few, you know, loose ends in the plot line as things were constructed, I think the movie works very well.
With standalone Star Wars films, of course, we don't have the crawl that sets it up. But we did get a bit of a setup with the classic blue text that, you know, Star Wars is affiliated with. Do you think this was sufficient enough to introduce that first part of the story, or were you expecting that to have a greater impact on the movie as a whole?
Well, I'm assuming that like most people who would see this movie, we know who Han Solo was or became later on. We probably know that this is a movie about the young Han Solo. I mean, I think the word is out about that. It works, I think, to construct the character, the boy who became the man Harrison Ford would later memorably play. The film does give us many of the pieces of the puzzle, I guess, of what constituted his personality, of why he was the way he was. And it works well. I don't think that you need an enormous amount of back knowledge to get into the film. But if you are a Star Wars fan, I think you'll be captivated by the ride that the film gives you.
Yeah, it kind of leads into how he is a survivalist yet with a heart.
Well, you know, I think about the Harrison Ford character as being influenced by the Humphrey Bogart character from Casablanca. I don't think I'm wrong because George Lucas was a great fan of Golden Age Hollywood. So you have the same kind of idea there. The idealist hiding his heart of gold under a very thick skin. He's been disappointed by a number of things, including love, but also politics. And at this point, particular point in time, as Casablanca begins, as the original Star Wars film from 77 begins, he doesn't want to stick his neck out for anybody anymore. And that will change, of course, because he does have ideals hidden away, and circumstances will lead him to fulfill that. And so in Solo, we do see how this type of character developed. He was, hurt in a number of ways and disappointed in the course of this movie. The movie ends optimistically in a certain sense, but, I mean, it's not without all kinds of bumps along the way for Han Solo.
Right, and compared to the other, trilogies of Star Wars movies where you have battles against, big political forces. This is about many more social issues, about how these big political forces affect the people on the very bottom. So there's more social issues about slavery, gangs running things, the empire and their control, and also you get droid autonomy. Well, you know, things like that, which I thought was a great thing by the character L3, voiced and played by Phoebe Waller-Bridge. Right,
the militant droid who, instead of providing a kind of comic relief, but not in the sense of earlier Star Wars movies, I mean, she is, you know, militantly in favor of equal rights for droids. And we also get kind of a pansexual implication, perhaps, between her and Carissian. So it's a fascinating kind of a thing. The movie really looks at harsher realities without becoming a dark movie somehow. I mean, it's brilliantly toned in that kind of way. You don't leave this feeling you've just been to an Ingmar Bergman film or anything of that kind. I mean, but the movie, against the backdrop, whether the backdrop, rather, of all the fast-moving action scenes, shows a very dark galaxy, not unlike many of the worst aspects of the world we live in today, with enormous squalor, with human trafficking or humanoid trafficking or whatever the case may be in a film like this, enslavement, exploitation, the power of criminal gangs to manipulate social conditions, and of course the empire promising to bring order to all of this, but really benefiting from much of the chaos.
Along with the darker themes and the struggles that the characters are put into, I also really liked that the cast was more diverse in the human sense. I mean, obviously you have aliens, you have droids. Star Wars is a plethora of different characters. But I feel that the more and more new films that are coming out, you know, this was the first Star Wars movie with a solo black female lead character.
Right.
Things like that. And some of the characters revealed towards the end, you see just the wide range.
Well, I was thinking about this same issue while watching the film and reflecting back on the late 1970s when Star Wars came about. And I'm sure that George Lucas, you know, meant no offense to any ethnic or racial group, but he just didn't think in these. No, I mean, most people in Hollywood and most people, I suppose, most white people in general were not really thinking about this. You may have supported civil rights and equal rights and voting rights, but how to implement the details of this in the everyday professional life and personal life that you were leading, this is something that has taken a few decades.
With the cast, if we expand upon that, first off, let's start with the young Han Solo himself, Alden Ehrenreich. And at first, when I heard about this movie, I admit I was a little trepidatious because I was like, you don't need to make a young Han Solo movie when Harrison Ford is still the living legend. And he's very much, you know, this is his character just as much as Indiana Jones is his character. But I was really impressed with how he adapted the mannerisms. And you can see how this was, okay, I'm convinced this is the young Han Solo.
Yeah, I think he did a very good job. I've seen Alden in movies, but he never particularly left an impression on me until Solo. I think that he does have a good future ahead of him based upon his ability to inhabit a realistic earlier version, a prototype of a very well-known character that was played by a very well-known actor ahead of him. So to say a cliche here, I mean, the shoes are kind of large to fill. I think he did a very good job. As to why do we need a young Han Solo movie, well, I guess why not? I mean, the Star Wars thing is being, you know, explored, perhaps exploited in some cases from a number of directions. So again, why not look at the origin story of this particular character? You know, it could have been a disaster, as was with anything else, but I think that the screenplay and at least the final direction by Ron Howard, as well as the cast, I mean, they pulled it off.
We'll touch upon Ron Howard's takeover, but before we do that, I want to touch upon Donald Glover's portrayal of Lando Calrissian. When, you know, he's a central character introduced in Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. But, you know, we don't know much about his backstory then. We knew him and Han were buddies from back in the day. But I really enjoyed Donald Glover's portrayal and, you know, his highlights of Lando's, you know, eccentricity, his love of capes, you know, all these little details that I found really enjoyable.
Oh, Glover is marvelous, smooth as silk and just as slippery in his role as Lando. Great performance by him. I mean, I have to say that the whole cast of supporting characters were quite good in this movie. But yes, he's another interesting case here where we didn't really know much about him. It's a story that waited to be told, and now we have a pretty good sense. I mean, who was this guy? How did he get to know Han Solo? Under what circumstances? We get to learn about the Millennium Falcon, where that came from. You know, going down the line here, we could check off a whole bunch of boxes. Where did Chewbacca the Wookiee come from? How did he enter it? Well, now we know.
Yeah, and the new actor who took over the role of Chewie also did a great job in, you know, taking over what is a classic role in a dynamic duo.
Yeah, although I don't want to mean any offense here. I suppose in some sense that's a little bit of an easier part to play. I mean,
not as much facial emotions,
right? Yeah, you've got to get the vocal inflections correct. But yes, I mean
the subtle mannerisms were set by Peter Mayhew,
right?
So with Solo, a Star Wars story, it was a difficult movie to actually get to the big screen and an expensive one because it was set to be directed by Phil Lord and Christopher Miller. And with mere weeks left on shooting schedule, Kathleen Kennedy brought in Ron Howard to take over the project. And of course, we hear the term creative differences mm-hmm. in a multitude of ways. But that was another thing that led me to be a little cautious with this movie was the fact that it switched directors so far into production. But ultimately, 70% of the shoot and direction is Ron Howard, and he saved the day. I mean, he's a veteran filmmaker.
Well, he must have worked very quickly pulling together 70% of the shoot here. The flaw of the movie, I mean, there's one scene I don't like, the giant outer space octopus, I think was kind of a stupid-looking thing, and was the one point where I think the movie dragged a little bit. We didn't need that. Added 10 more minutes, kind of cut that out. I mean, the only problem that I think, you know, is inherent in this movie, and I would have to see it another time to kind of map out the flow of the plot line, I think there are some moments that don't quite fit together, and that's probably because of the enormous rush during which Ron Howard completed and reshot probably a lot of this film. So given that, though, he did a great job. Usually, I would agree with you about being apprehensive about this kind of thing because normally, this is a red flag of a project that's fumbling along. It's headed toward the going off the rails altogether. You're trying to scrap together, salvage something that's about to turn into a train wreck. This was certainly not a train wreck. It was a fast moving train that got to its destination. So. Hats off to Ron Howard for pulling it together. Exactly what the creative differences were, I'm not really sure about that. I'm sure this will surface.
I just heard inklings that they wanted to improv a little too much and veer away from the script to really make it a new and fresh movie. But this had the solid script written by Lawrence Kasdan and son Jonathan Kasdan, and Lawrence goes all the way back to Empire Strikes Back. So you're talking about someone who inherently knows the vision of Star Wars.
Yeah, and I think that is apparent in virtually every scene of this movie. I mean, I feel that this movie delivers what a Star Wars fan from the beginning of the whole saga would want in a Star Wars movie. I like it much better than The Last Jedi, for example. I mean, some of the recent movies have, I think, kind of done that and, you know, veered a little bit away from the tone, maybe, of Star Wars while keeping within the story. I don't think there's anything wrong with that necessarily, but I think from the standpoint of purely enjoying one of these movies, keeping to the George Lucas spirit is not a bad idea.
Exactly. Well, as more of these standalone Star Wars films are made, the more diverse settings and worlds will be available, because after all, it's multiple galaxies that are available, all these infinite number of planets that could be explored. And just as Rogue One does not have, you know, the classic lightsaber fights, the thing that we associate with Star Wars, it still felt like a Star Wars movie and had this good balance. So do you think that people will still be yearning for more?
Well, unless this movie does badly at the box office, I would imagine we'll be seeing a 30-year-old Han Solo coming up pretty soon. Maybe Alden will play this character with a little, you know, makeup to make him look a touch of gray or something. I don't know, something to make him look just a bit older than he is in this film. And we can keep the story going, I mean, as the pieces all sort of seem to be converging. So I'm not detecting any flagging in appetite amongst the public for these kinds of movies. I think Star Wars is going to be with us for a long time.
And I'm very happy that it is. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
Dave Lurson is arts and entertainment editor of the Shepherd Express newspaper and our regular film contributor. He spoke with Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski about Solo, which opens today.